So now into the world, I've got a story to tell. We're going to keep hearing that phrase a lot over the next couple of days. And that's really going to shape our conversations. And I have to say, I absolutely love this phrase. When I was invited to do this, I was like, yeah, you know, that sounds good. And then I heard the theme and I was like, oh, this is going to be really good. It brings to mind one of my favorite illustrations from one of my favorite children's books. There's a writer, Oliver Jeffers, and this is from his book called I Am a Child of Books. So I am a child of stories. And I love this illustration. I hope you all can see it, of the children perched atop the world, and we've got stories, stories, stories just spewing forth in every direction, exploding out into the world, beyond the world, everything that ever was and will be, everything imaginable. And I love the phrase in the corner, we are made from stories. Forget flesh and bones. I will argue any day that what makes us who we are stories. So, that being said, I also think it's significant and interesting that we're having this conversation here at camp. This is a beautiful camp that I have heard about for years. You know, I've heard Shrine Month stories for a long time, and I'm so thrilled to finally be able to come here. I'm a camp person. How many of you would consider yourself, like, you know who you are? Who are my camp people? Come on now. There we go. All right. I spent my formative years at camp, and I would actually say that camp was one of the most formative experiences and places and relationships in my life. I was formed as a Christian at Sheldon Calvary Camp on the shore of Lake Erie, Diocese of Pittsburgh, and I was formed at Girl Scout Camp. And I spent a lot of years as a Girl Scout leader forming other young women, and a Boy Scout leader forming young men. And even to this day, Camp Canoga continues to be a place of formation for me. I've come to that later in my adult life. So a few days at camp here at Shrinemont is a bonus. So what's so special about camp, and what does it have to do with our conversation? I think the interesting thing about camp is it's a retreat, right? We're stepping out of the world and thinking about our theme, into the world. It's very interesting, I think, that we're getting there by first stepping out of the world. Now, we all know when you're at camp, you're definitely removed from the rest of the world. There's no Wi-Fi and there's no cellular, right? So there's this sense of almost being time out of time. We go into a self-contained community, a little self-contained universe that formed very intentionally. You can block out the rest of your life. It's a little idealistic sometimes. It's a little utopian, but for many people, that's where the transformation happens. Something happens at camp that, if we are lucky, transforms who we are and changes us for when we go back out into the world, into the real world. So how does this transformation occur? What transforms us at camp, and how do we take it out into the world? I mean, that's always the wish. We want to take it back out into the world. I would say that a lot of it is the stories we tell. I mean, one of the big associations with camp is campfire stories, right? I think we are called to take what happens at camp and those stories and the transformations that we experience in our lives, the lives of those with whom we interact, I think those stories will transform the world. So over the next day or so, I'm going to invite you to gather with me around our proverbial campfire, and we're going to spend some time figuring out what are the stories we want to tell, who we are to be telling the stories, who we're telling the stories to, why we want to tell these stories, and how stories shape and transform our actions. So the provost of my university, who is an astrophysicist, you know, we're not talking humanities, we're talking astrophysicist, said stories orient and inspire us. And that phrase has stuck with me. You know, every once in a while you hear a phrase and it just kind of stays on your mind and your heart. And that phrase, to me, is one of them. It speaks to the power of stories in our lives. Our identity is formed by stories, isn't it? What are some of the identities that you have? We're going to be participatory. I know it's early. What are some identities that we have?
Mother.
Camp director. Oh, you could tell stories, right? Our families. How many of you share family stories? So one of my favorite things, I go to the beach with my whole entire family. I get myself settled under the umbrella with my book. And my nieces, who are like 9 and 10, come up and they're like, Zia Lisa, tell me stories about when our mummies were a little girl. Like, they want dirt. They want 40-year-old dirt, right? This is how we know who we are, where we came from. I know stories about my grandmother's brother, her favorite brother, who was killed in the Battle of the Bulge. I never met this man, but I know stories about him, and I know how my family got to this country and where they came from, right? So that's a big part of our identity. And there are other stories that shape other aspects of our identity. Maybe they're the stories of who we are based on the school we went to, the town we grew up in. I could tell you scouting stories all day. Maybe some of our stories are based on who we are as a woman, as a particular racial identity, as a particular country of, I'm Irish, I'm Italian, or whatever. So these stories really shape who we are. Now, I'd like to think also, we can tell a lot of good Episcopal stories and Christian stories and lots more where that, where that's coming from. So marketers know this, right? How many of you have ever used, and you don't really have to raise your hand, Old Spice deodorant? Okay? You know who you are. Here's the thing. All right, everyone's like sniffing their neighbor. Here's the thing. You don't just buy pine scent or ocean scent. I can't make this up. You buy Bear Glove, Swagger, Wolf Thorn, or Captain Invisible. These are stories. These are stories. And how about that quintessential designer, Ralph Lauren, right? His whole empire is predicated on stories. Now, we could argue that a lot of the mythos that he has created, about Americana is an America that never really was. It's idealized, right? But he's trying to sell clothes. So whether it's, the Old West or the Roaring Twenties or whatever story it is, boy, we're buying it, right? So marketers know this. Do you remember the Apple campaign a couple years ago that was based on the Walt Whitman poem? Do you remember that one? What will your verse be? That was a fascinating campaign. And what was interesting to me about it is that it makes it very clear. It presupposes you, the potential buyer of Apple products, have a story that you are itching to tell, that is worth telling, that is worth hearing, sharing. Now, presumably, you're also going to use your Apple product to take your picture, write your notes, capture your video, right? But I think the idea that you have a story to tell, and the language is important too, again from the Whitman poem, what will your verse be? A verse is part of a bigger story, right? And so your verse is just part of a bigger story. So C.S. Lewis, who is obviously a master storyteller, understood this. To him, the power of story and the craving for story is reflected in his quote, "We have eternity written on our hearts." He understood that we all have a craving for something epic, to be part of something larger than ourselves, for our story to matter, for our lives, our loves, our actions to matter. We want to be part of something great. Well, guess what, folks? Aren't we already part of something great? We are part of the most epic story ever. We are part of the ongoing story of the people of God. This is the story that we need to take out into the world. We need to take this life-changing story and be invitational about it. So, and let's think about that a little further. I mean, it's through storytelling that we become disciples, right? We learn of those who preceded us through their stories, through scripture and the lives of saints. We heard about, I mean, that was very moving this morning. Think of men being burned at the stake. And Jesus formed his disciples through stories. Yes, it was a very immersive process. You know, they weren't sitting in a classroom. They were walking from town to town, and he was performing miracles. But as they walked, he told a lot of stories, didn't he? And if you ask Jesus a question, we see time and time again, rather than a direct answer, he answered with a story. Everyone who approached him with a question got a story. And it isn't just ancient stories. What is evangelism in today, in 2018, but sharing stories about the way in which God is transforming our lives and communities? So let's break this down a little. I think as people of faith, we tell stories on maybe four different levels. So first we have the foundational stories of our faith. Scripture, right? We read these stories in worship, of course, but let's think more broadly than that. We can think about our Bible studies in which we engage in scripture. We can think about movies that are based on scripture. We can think about godly play and all of the I wonder questions and the countless ways that we, I want to say exegesis, but the verb, like exegete, is that a word? We'll make it up, it'll be a word. The countless ways that we engage with these stories, or church artwork, for that matter, right? Our stained glass windows, any sort of liturgical arts. So at the next level, I think we have our denominational stories. And this would be the history of who we are and our identity as Episcopalians. What does it mean to not just be Christian, but an Episcopalian? So this might be our governance, our creeds, our style and tradition of worship, our hymnody, and even the way our social justice engagement, the way we are in the world and our communities. Which brings me to the third one. I think we tell stories about our individual parish communities. Now here's the thing, if I say to you, tell me a story about your church, and you start with our parish was founded in 1802, I don't really care. The stories about our parishes are really temporally based. They are who we are as a parish in this particular community in this particular moment in time, because who we are today is not who we were 5 years ago. The cast of characters have changed, and yes, I realize the same people are on the vestry again and again and again. The cast of characters have changed. Maybe our communities have changed. Society has changed. So I think particularly with that one, there's an element of timeliness to it. And then finally, I think we tell stories, individual stories of transformation. And as I mentioned, this is evangelism. This is the Jesus movement, folks. You know, people say, well, I'm a little uncomfortable with evangelism. Like, I don't quite know enough about scripture. But can you tell a story about how God is transforming your life? Can you ask other people to tell you those stories? Can you encourage your parishioners and your congregations to tell stories about their experiences? People can speak from their own truth and from their own experiences. So that's where we have the opportunities for evangelism. So where are we going over the next couple of days? Now, anyone actually who knows me knows that this is actually a really funny slide, because I have this gift. I can get lost anywhere. I can get lost in the woods, I can get lost in buildings, I can get lost in cities, and I always get where I'm going, just not the way that I thought we'd get there. And I have no doubt that the next day or so we'll have a lot of that. I can go off on many, many side tangents, and I hope you'll enjoy going with me. So over the next 2 days, as I've said, we're going to look at those four different levels of storytelling. We're going to look at some of the particular characteristics of our society today. the way people receive stories, the way people perceive stories. We're going to talk about how to create stories that maybe break through the noise and the clutter, considering not only how to identify which stories are worth telling, but also thinking about who should tell them, how do we craft them, how to distribute them. And that's where we'll get into an area that is of my particular interest, which is digital ministry. Now, I'm here to tell you, if you're like, all right, I hope she's going to tell us how many times a day do I post to Facebook? I'm probably not. That being said, we can have that conversation anytime. But I think what's really important is that we look at this, we take the big picture approach. We almost look at the theology of what we're trying to do when we communicate and we share stories. So I'm going to be pulling in a lot of digital ministry examples, but we're not necessarily going to break down, like, why is this a good website? We can talk about that anytime. But I think we're going to take a big picture look, and I think ultimately that's going to be more helpful to you. So what we're going to do next, from what I understand, we're going to head off, yes? Okay, Julie gives me the thumbs up, and I hope my timing has been good. We are going to head off to our various workshops, all of which I know will be fabulous. And I hope as you participate, you begin to think about how is what I'm hearing in the context of this workshop, how does it intersect with any of the four levels of story? How can I craft stories from those four levels that intersect with our workshop topics? So with that, proceed on, and I will see you back, I guess at 10:55. I don't know if we're on time or not, but when you're done. So, all right.